From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo held a joint press conference earlier today with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu during a trip to the Middle East.
Israel has no greater friend than the United States of America. The Israeli people can have confidence that President Trump will maintain this close bond.
What else was discussed in their meeting? We'll talk about that with Pennsylvania Congressman Scott Perry a little later in the program. And we've talked about the growing concerns over big tech controlling social media and censoring conservative speech. And we're going to continue to delve into that topic. But more and more research is suggesting social media is behind record levels of anxiety and depression among those ranging in age from 7 to about 24 years of age. What is that exactly is behind this troubling trend? We'll explore that question with Gene Twenge, professor of psychology at San Diego State University, in just a moment. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to be on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, very important topic here about what is happening with young people and social media. The first signs of a problem started to emerge around 2014. More young people said they felt overwhelmed and depressed. College counseling centers reported sharp increases in the number of students seeking treatment for mental health issues. Studies showed that the increases in symptoms of depression and suicide among adolescents have nearly doubled since 2010. Now, there was one societal shift over the past decade that may be behind this sharp increase. This generation, what's being referred to as the I generation, the first generation to be completely connected with technology, the spread of smartphones and digital media, all the social media, the texting, the gaming, all of this. Is this the factor driving these issues? Well, here to delve into the impact of social media on young people leading to an increase in depression and suicide is Gene Twenge, professor of psychology at San Diego State University. She is the author of a new book, iGen, Why Today's Superconnected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. Professor, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much.
Obviously, you're concerned about the trends you see in the mental health condition of young people. How convinced are you that this is connected to social media?
Well, it is, of course, very difficult to prove that for sure. But we see this big increase in not just depression, but psychological distress, suicidal thoughts, suicide attempts, even self-harm behaviors in terms of people showing up at the emergency room. And it all starts around the same time, about 2011 or 2012. That happens to be the time that smartphones became common, when social media moved from being optional to mandatory among teens. And not only that, but we know that when people spend way too much time staring at a screen, they often spend less time sleeping. They often spend less time with their friends face-to-face. So you have a bunch of things going on that all point in this direction of, well, if you're doing less of things that are really good for your mental health and more of things that are bad for it, like staring at a screen for 5 to 9 hours a day, then the end result is this big increase in mental health issues.
And this is based upon a pretty wide, broad survey. I mean, 600,000 Americans involved in this survey. So this is not just a small sampling. I mean, this data is showing some pretty significant increases. I mean, depression surging 69% among 16 to 17-year-olds from 2009 to 2017. Suicides over doubling. I mean, these are significant numbers.
They are. And, you know, this is what's called a screening study, meaning it's getting a cross-section of the whole population. We're not just looking at people who are showing up at a counseling center or seeking help from a doctor. This study was intended to find out among the general population how many people have these issues. So it's giving us some pretty definitive proof. It's not just that people are more willing to seek help. We actually have more teens and more young adults who are suffering from depression and suicidal thoughts.
Yeah, you make that point where it's not just that people are you know, more open to talk about this, or that we're doing a better job in drawing people into counseling centers. You actually show that in the rate of suicide from 18 to 19 year olds, and the numbers have climbed 56% from 2008-2017. So that's behavior that is quantifiable.
Exactly, because that's always what you have to ask when you have survey data like this. Even though it's an anonymous survey, and they take every step to make sure the participants know that, you know, it's not going to be connected with their name. These aren't public declarations, but still, it's always a good question to say, well, are these same patterns showing up in behaviors that wouldn't be affected by people being more willing to report something? And the answer is yes. You see this rise in actual suicides. There's a rise in the number of teens who are being hospitalized for suicidal thoughts and suicide attempts. And then there's a rise in the number of teens who are showing up in emergency rooms for self-harm behaviors like cutting. And that increase is particularly large among teen girls.
Now, Professor Twenge, obviously causality is a big issue you look at in research. You know, what causes this behavior? And a part of this is eliminating things that the other portions of the population are impacted by. You go through a number of things talking about the job rate. That usually causes stress. Well, in a growing economy and low job, you know, low unemployment, that's not really an issue. So you strike that off. So you've kind of gone through a process of elimination.
That's exactly right. So, you know, when I first started seeing these signs of increased depression and unhappiness among young people, I really had no idea what the cause would be, especially because it didn't line up with economic factors at all. It gets going, you know, around 2012 and continues and meets the highest rates in 2017, when, of course, the economy was doing very well, unemployment was very low, so it just didn't seem like that was it. It doesn't seem to be increased academic pressure, because the amount of time that teens spend on homework is actually lower among most age groups. It didn't seem to be things like, say, the opioid epidemic, because that was something that mostly affected older people. There are a lot of plausible causes that don't really fit the data, and I'm sure there are still some out there that are worth considering, but it's tough to think of anything else that had such a big impact on teens and young adults' day-to-day lives. You know, the hours they spend outside of school and work, the way they spend that time has fundamentally shifted. It used to be they'd spend that time with friends face-to-face, and now it's much more likely they're spending that time on social media or gaming.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Professor Gene Twenge, my guest, discussing alarming trends of depression, anxiety, and even suicide among the I generation, that's roughly age 7 to 24. You know, Professor, as I was looking through your data and the book that you wrote, a couple of things that I saw that, number one, as you point out, they're less face-to-face interactions. So they're more connected but less relational from a standpoint of actually interacting with human beings. And there's a sense, as I see this, a sense of isolation.
Yeah, and that's what we find, too, that feelings of loneliness among teens suddenly shot upward right around that same time, around 2011, 2012. And that's the same time that their face-to-face social interactions with friends, they'd been on decline for a while, but that's when that trend accelerated, that they were just a lot less likely to hang out with their friends, to go to the mall, to go to parties, to go to the movies. Any of these things that teens have historically done as a way to get together with their friends, iGen teens are doing them less, even less than teens not even that long ago. The decreases just since 2012 have been considerable.
It also appears that this is the least religious generation, very little connectedness with organized religion, growing up in homes that are non-religious themselves, looks like they're predisposed not to express a belief in God. That could be a major coping mechanism, if you want to describe it as that, going through the troubling years of teenhood.
Yeah, we did look at that, because for a while people had thought, well, maybe it's just people are less willing to associate with a religion or go to services, but that, you know, could potentially maybe not play out in personal beliefs. or maybe it's replaced by spirituality. But we really found there's just a wholesale decline in both private and public religious belief, and even in feelings of spirituality among these two youngest generations. So iGeners, born 95 and later, and also among millennials, born in 1980 to 94, both of these generations are significantly less religious than the generations before them. Although, to be clear, the majority of young people do still believe in God and do still affiliate with a religion, but there's an increasing percentage who are completely disassociated from religion.
So I guess the message that you would want to convey to parents that have kids in this age category, they may even be seeing signs of depression or anxiety in their children. Because one of the things you talk about is that, you know, they're kind of gripped by fear. They're fearful a lot. So that leads to that anxiety. What can parents do?
Well, you know, if your kid is showing these types of signs, obviously, you're going to want to have a talk and then get them the help they need if that looks like it's the best way to go. I think in general, we could all stand to just think more mindfully about how we're using our time outside of work and school, that it's very tempting to get sucked into, you know, an internet wormhole or scrolling through social media for hours. And we should think about that a little more and, yeah, use our technology, but use it more mindfully. Think about all the other things that you could be doing with your time that would probably make you happier.
Now, I know you don't I didn't read the whole book, but there's a physiological response to social media. I mean, people actually have a physical response to opening an email or getting a text or a tweet. So we're literally linked to this, and it is in some ways, it meets a need in our bodies.
Yeah, so you're right. I'm not a neuroscientist, so it's not my area of research. But there is some fascinating early research out there and you get an email or you get a like on a social media post, that you get a little squirt of dopamine, that it keeps you coming back. And, you know, a lot of these apps are designed to do that. It's the other thing is sometimes left out of the equation. So Sean Parker, one of the founders of Facebook, said recently, Facebook exploits a vulnerability in human psychology, but we did it anyway. And it makes sense. Those social media companies are designing their apps to keep people on them for as long as possible, because that's how they make the most money.
This is a place where parents have to step in. This can have obviously deadly consequences. Professor Twang, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Very, very interested. And folks, I'm going to talk more about this later in the program. We're going to be joined by Congressman Scott Perry next to talk about Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's visit to Israel today. He'll be there tomorrow as well. But I'm going to return to this topic today later in the program, because it's very, very important, because I think as we've pushed God and religion from the public square, it's being filled with something else that is not satisfying. It's actually leading children, young people, to be anxious, to be depressed. What can we do about it? We're going to talk about that later here on Washington Watch. So don't go away. Coming up next, Pennsylvania's Congressman Scott Perry joins me to talk about Mike Pompeo's trip to the Middle East. Don't go away.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juno. Accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachmann. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
In recent news, we've seen the left's disregard for life. They've gone beyond defending abortion to now defending infanticide. We've seen the push for legislation in New York, Vermont, and Virginia that would allow abortion even on a baby's birthday. And if an abortion fails, to withhold medical care from the baby born alive, causing him or her to die. This is infanticide. In the left's most recent act of disregard toward human life, we saw each Democratic senator running for president vote against a bill that would protect babies born alive. Help us end birthday abortion. On the day of a baby's birth, the first article placed on the baby is a thermal hat with blue and pink stripes. That's our hope for every baby. But there are no federal laws in place to protect all babies born alive from being killed outside the womb. To show your support for the life of all babies born alive, visit endbirthdayabortion.com. For a donation of $9, we'll deliver one baby hat on your behalf to U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to send a powerful reminder that babies should be welcomed with warmth.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in Israel as we speak, having just met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu earlier today. They had a joint press conference. And this comes just less than a month before Israel will have national elections. Now, the Times of Israel notes that Pompeo's Israeli itinerary is characteristic of the administration's approach to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which has been largely private and without participation from the Palestinians. Now, there was no public discussion of this Israeli-Palestinian peace accord that's supposed to be coming out after the April 9th elections. We'll see what happens there. But here to talk more extensively about the Secretary of State's trip and America's friendship with Israel is Republican Congressman Scott Perry, who represents the 10th Congressional District of the Keystone State, Pennsylvania. He serves on the House Committee on Foreign Affairs as well as Transportation and Infrastructure. Congressman Perry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. It's great to be with you.
What messages might the United States be sending with Secretary of State's visit to the Middle East, in particular to Israel?
Well, as you know, the President Netanyahu, or Prime Minister Netanyahu, who's coming to the United States next month, but in anticipation of that, and with the you know, the legal concerns that the Prime Minister is having in his own country, I think the message is very clear that the United States maintains and stands in this with this inseparable bond with the nation of Israel, and the Secretary of State is, I'm sure, going to discuss all things of mutual concern, of which are many, not the least of which, of course, is some kind of peace with the Palestinians, but also, you know, our circumstance, you know, regarding Syria, regarding Hezbollah, regarding Iran, regarding the Golan Heights, you know, the normal panoply of discussions. But really, I think, to send a very clear message that the United States stands with the people of Israel and the president or the prime minister or the leader of Israel. And, you know, I would suspect there'll be a discussion about the legal circumstances and the fact that they should probably follow their course. But at the same time, this is not for the United States or the world to decide. This is for the people of Israel to decide. These charges, or like similar charges, have been been brought in the past to no avail. And, you know, as folks living in the United States and not reading the daily newspapers and watching the news out of Israel on a daily basis, I think it's hard for us to make a judgment, and we should make a judgment in that regard. I mean, that, you know, Israel has due process as well as they should, and so this might be politically motivated. It might not have anything to do with any realistic charges, but they might be politically motivated. And while Netanyahu, while the prime minister is the prime minister and the leader of Israel, we stand with him, and we stand with the people and the nation of Israel.
It's quite amazing. It was almost 4 years ago to the date that the prime minister was in the United States and spoke before a joint session of Congress. I was actually there in the chamber when he spoke. It was a fantastic message.
Yes.
I mean, strong, bold leadership, and it's amazing what has changed in 4 years, where we were moving forward with, the United States of America, moving forward with the Iran nuclear deal. That now has been rescinded by this administration. And there's no daylight between the U.S. now and Israel. And I think that's quite clear. And I think and was said as such, basically, the United States, the Secretary of State, giving their blessing to Israel today and defending itself against those that would want to do them harm.
Well, that's right. And there is no daylight. But when you say that is clear, I think it's very clear to people that are observing that there's no daylight between this administration and the people of Israel and the nation of Israel. And there is no daylight, from my perspective, from this member of Congress and many members of Congress. However, as you're well aware, there are fissures in that support and that inseparability, not in my party, but unfortunately in the Democrat Party. There have been very vocal and very obvious and public fissures in that inseparable bond.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because the secretary brought that up in part today. In fact, I've got a clip of what he said.
Sure.
I'm gonna play that. I wanna get your response to play clip number three.
The Trump administration too is dedicated to monitoring, combating anti-Semitism. Our special envoy, Ilan Carr, was recently here to discuss how we could deepen our commitment to battle this odious prejudice and all other forms of intolerance. With the dark wave of anti-Semitism rising in Europe and in the United States, all nations, especially those in the West, must go to the barricades against bigotry. Our challenge is especially urgent as the hot rhetoric of prejudice cloaks itself in the language of the academy or of diplomacy or public policy. Sadly, we in the United States have seen anti-Semitic language uttered even in the great halls of our own capital. This should not be.
I mean, that's a pretty direct statement and a reference to what's been happening in Congress, as you just made reference to, in the Democratic Party.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. And so, you know, the people that serve in Congress are the duly elected representatives of a district for the American people. And while they might not and certainly don't speak for all the American people, the rhetoric is noticed and it's taken and it is noteworthy. And I think what the secretary is obviously saying is that while some people in Congress might feel that way, they do not speak for this administration. And in the greatest effect, they do not speak for the vast majority of the people of the United States. And there's nothing else really that he can do except draw the distinction, because these members are duly elected members of Congress, and we have, you know, First Amendment free speech rights in America, but there's a certain standard of decorum that we expect, and unfortunately that has been breached in the halls of Congress in the most inflammatory way. And obviously the secretary wants to distance this administration from that rhetoric completely.
Yet another area where there's such a contrast between the two major political parties. Congressman Scott Perry, thanks so much for taking time out to join us today.
I appreciate this opportunity. Thank you very much. God bless you and your audience.
All right. Take care. Congressman Scott Perry of Pennsylvania. I'm going to talk a little bit more about this when we come back, and then I want to return to our top topic in just a moment. So don't go away. More Washington Watch to come.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. This program is made available by supporters of the Family Research Council, which you can be one if you would like. Go to tonyperkins.com and find out more how you can join the Family Research Council's growing base of support all across America. By the way, you can also get Washington Watch via the Stand Firm app. If you have not yet downloaded the Stand Firm app to your smartphone, it'll make your smartphone smarter. Download the Stand Firm app. Go to the App Store or go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. Now, how does it work? Well, it has a lot of tools on it to make you an engaged, informed citizen. Not only can you get the daily Washington Watch, but you can get the daily update that we send out. You can also get legislative alerts that will tell you when and what you need to do to affect policy that affects your family. So, again, get the Stand Firm app, go to TonyPerkins.com, or go to the App Store. All right, returning for just a moment to the issue of the Secretary of State being in Israel. Scott Perry made reference to the Golan Heights, and that was actually in the discussion because there's been some talk about giving this land back to Syria. This was captured in the 1967 war, and then in 1981, I believe, Israel began to govern that region under their laws. It's often referred to, like the so-called West Bank, as occupied territory. But the United States has, even I think as early as last week, see if I can find that. Yes, the State Department, headed by Mike Pompeo, last week referred to the West Bank as actually dropped the term occupied when it made reference to the West Bank, which has long been, well, at least in the last administration, the policy of calling that area occupied. Now, if you've been to Israel, you know that the West Bank is really the eastern part of Israel. I mean, Judea, Samaria, this is the tomb of Joseph, of the patriarchs. Jacob is in Hebron, Bethlehem. I mean, all these areas that are central to the Old Testament, even in the New Testament, this is all biblical land. Now, many what they call settlements, Jewish settlements, they're actually thriving communities, towns, cities that are there. That's a part of the concern. I had dinner last week. In fact, just a few moments ago, you heard my phone ring. That was a mayor from a city in Israel. They're concerned that this peace agreement might lead to giving up additional land back like almost 16 years ago, 15 years ago, when the Gaza Strip was given up to the Palestinians. And the concern here is that this land is biblical land, belongs to Israel, it's theirs, they're governing it, and the United States shouldn't be pushing them around to give it up. Now, no one knows what's in this peace accord. We saw this administration has been very, very strong on Israel in terms of moving the embassy to Jerusalem. First, I mean, they talked about for 20 years, finally, a president who would do it. I have no doubts about this administration's commitment to Israel and, quite frankly, their commitment to the Christian evangelical community who understands the importance of Israel and the land. So I would just say for those that are overly concerned about what may come from this peace accord, that just hold on. We'll see. This administration has given us no reason to be concerned about the relationship between the United States and Israel and the relationship between Israel and their land. All right? Pray about it, but don't be overly worked up about it. All right. We're going to go to the phones here in a little bit, but I want to go back to our first topic. And that is this, and I'm probably going to go through the break on this, but it's this question about the growing mental, emotional health problems that's brewing among teens and young adults, and what they call the I generation. This is age 7 to 24. Maybe you're in that category, or maybe you have children or grandchildren in that category. So you really need to pay attention to this. Depression has more than doubled, as has suicide. Anxiety and hopelessness has increased by 71%. I mean, think about, you know, people often say, well, it's because we don't have certain things. It's the environment. If we could just change and make sure that, you know, kids have the things that they need. Look, I look at what kids have today compared to what, you know, I grew up with and many in my generation. The things, material goods that we have. And as we talked about earlier, unemployment is the lowest rate in 50 years. Growing economy. Materially, we are blessed. So why the anxiety? Why the hopelessness? You know, what potential contributing factors can be identified with this iGen? Well, as we said, for one, they're more connected with technology than any other generation. But that connectedness is superficial. It's not real. Friends and followers are virtual. While this generation values inclusion, they are more isolated than previous generations. Now, they're safer in terms of the way they drive and live, but they're more fearful. In fact, it would appear that they are gripped by fear. Fear of rejection, fear of inequality, fear of a hostile world, fear of almost everything. So, what to do about it? We're going to talk about that on the other side of the break, and we're going to be taking your phone calls here on this edition of Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juno, accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachmann. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
In recent news, we've seen the left's disregard for life. They've gone beyond defending abortion to now defending infanticide. We've seen the push for legislation in New York, Vermont, and Virginia that would allow abortion even on a baby's birthday. And if an abortion fails, to withhold medical care from the baby born alive, causing him or her to die. This is infanticide. In the left's most recent act of disregard toward human life, we saw each Democratic senator running for president vote against a bill that would protect babies born alive. Help us end birthday abortion. On the day of a baby's birth, the first article placed on the baby is a thermal hat with blue and pink stripes. That's our hope for every baby. But there are no federal laws in place to protect all babies born alive from being killed outside the womb. To show your support for the life of all babies born alive, visit endbirthdayabortion.com. For a donation of $9, we'll deliver one baby hat on your behalf to U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to send a powerful reminder that babies should be welcomed with warmth.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Website is TonyPerkins.com. All right. I want to finish this conversation, then I'm going to open up the phone lines. I'd really like to hear from anyone that's in that I generation. I mean, that's a pretty big span, you know, 7 to 24 years of age, about your social media habits. If you think this report is on target from a standpoint of, you know, what your peers may be experiencing. You know, I'd love to hear from you. Now, I want to go back to what I said right there at the break. This generation, the one thing they say that they actually drive better. They're safe. I know we joke about it, but they like the safe spaces. They're just safe. They're focused on all this stuff about being safe, and the reason is because they're gripped by their fear. They're fearful of a lot. But there's another distinguishing trait, and I brought this up with Professor Twenge, and that is, and I actually think this could explain some of the fear, because they're the least churched generation, growing up in non-religious households, and many of them, and Professor Twenge said not all, but many of them rejecting a belief in God. That's the spirituality. They don't even have a personal reference to religion or spirituality. They're rejecting a belief in God, the Bible, and the reality of eternity. Now, the Bible speaks very clearly to this issue. When we fail to fear or reverence God, we live in a constant nagging, paralyzing fear of man. Now, I wrote about this, by the way, a book called No Fear. In part, it tells the stories of young people standing up for their faith and overcoming their fear. But this generation is gripped by fear. Proverbs 29:25 says, "The fear of man brings a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord shall be safe." But I think what really speaks to the heart of this is found in Joshua chapter 1, where Moses, the Lord giving direction to Joshua as he's taking over for Moses, he says, "No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you." I mean, that keeps you from being lonely and isolated, knowing that God is going to be with you. Then he goes on, and some of you may be familiar with this, says, "Be strong and of good courage. For to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous that," now listen, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. See, this command to be strong and courageous is not to confront the enemy, but rather it's to obey God, to walk in relationship with him and adhere to what he says is the way to go. The book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and you will have good success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed. For the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Now, how do you know this is true? Well, actually, there's research. Dr. Pat Fagan at the Marriage and Religion Research Institute goes through volumes of government research and data, rather, that shows that families, that number one, are intact. He looks at the intersection of family structure and religious participation. But when you look at one of the studies he looked at was happiness. And those kids that grew up in intact homes and attended church on a regular basis scored much higher when it came to fulfillment, happiness in life. But what's happened in the tragedy is that what the I generation and really every generation craves is meaning, purpose, and identity, and they're found in real relationships. The most foundational and significant being a relationship with our Creator. Now, through the marginalization of religion, in particular Christianity, through our schools and in the pop culture, more and more young people are rejecting the very thing they crave. So what can be done? Well, one, this is why we defend religious freedom, the ability for people to live out their faith in a very real intangible way that influences the people around them. But what we're seeing is that as religion, and again, when I say religion, I'm discussing specifically Christianity, as that's being driven from the public square, fewer and fewer children are being exposed to it. And so they're growing up absent the very thing that will bring the significance, the meaning, and the purpose to life. Now, let me just say this. If we have any of the iGen young people listening, if you might be listening, if you're one that's gripped by fear and anxiety, but you've not tried a relationship with Jesus Christ, why not try it? I mean, what does it hurt? You know, Paul in the New Testament tells us that we're not to be anxious about anything, but by prayer, take our concerns, our fears, our troubles to God. Now, my suggestion would be try putting down your smartphone and have a heart-to-heart talk with God, the very God who loved you enough to send his son Jesus to die for your sins, to end that separation, that gap between you and God. I mean, what do you have to lose? Why not try it? Now, for parents and grandparents, you know, don't buy into the lie that children should decide for themselves whether or not they want to go to church or learn about God. That's nonsense. I mean, how many parents would take the same approach to education? Well, let them decide for themselves whether they want to learn to read. You know, they don't. Well, why are you imposing yourself on them and making them read? Or, you know, let them decide for themselves whether or not they want to tie their shoes. Let them go through life with Velcro shoes. You know, why impose potty training on them? Let them decide for themselves. That's crazy. Well, the same thing has to do with God and exposing them to religion, a relationship with the one who created them. See, I think there is a clear connection between the least churched generation and the highest levels of anxiety, depression, and even suicide. They have everything they need. They have all of the material things that they could want. Almost everything is at their fingertips. But yet, there's an emptiness. There's an isolation. There's a loneliness. See, this is where I think that we have to be intentional as parents and as grandparents of going against what, you know, maybe the flow, maybe feel like you're swimming upstream in this culture. But I think that's what we've got to do. We've got to be about making sure our children, grandchildren, hear the truth. And we've got to be working in the broader culture to ensure that other people can hear. Now, they have a right to choose. You can't force this on anyone. But we should not have to hide the source of the hope that's within us. And in fact, the scripture tells us, be ready to give a reason for the hope that is within you. But today, increasingly, that runs counter to many of the policies and the laws that are being adopted all the way from the school board to the Congress. That if you are a believer, you better keep that to yourself. I mean, we've seen it in the Senate Judiciary Committee, where people who of faith are grilled for their faith for judicial appointments. That somehow their faith is a dogma that will that runs counter to the law. We're living. I mean, I think what we see happening here, just like what we've been talking the last couple of weeks about, looking at Venezuela and the effect and outcome of socialism. I mean, we're seeing it playing out right here on the national stage. And then at the same, it amazes me that you still have political candidates that are running on socialistic agendas when this is playing out. People literally having to drink water out of sewage pipes, let alone not having food. They're just trying to get water. And we have people in this country wanting to move this nation in that direction. Oh, but we're talking about democratic socialism. Like there's a distinction. Well, the same is true when we talk about pushing God out of our culture, out of our country, out of our communities, out of our schools. And then we see the generation that has lived with those policies. They're the most anxious, the most depressed, and they're taking their own lives at a higher rate than any other generation. What will it take for us to connect the dots? See, for me, I can't sit by and be quiet. I just cannot. I refuse to be silent when I see what is happening to an entire generation. It's been increasing. It's been escalating. This has been the trajectory that we've been on as a nation. The more that we have pushed moral standards and the God who establishes nature and nature's God, the more we have pushed him aside and his policies the principles, those transcendent truths, the more we have pushed them out, the greater our problems have become. I mean, what can we not see that? It's a rhetorical question. I'm sure that most of those listening see that. But our policymakers want to continue down the same path and then scratch their heads and ask questions. Why are we losing our young people? Well, this is why. So the time has never been more urgent for us as believers, as followers of Jesus Christ, to be open, to be bold, to be courageous in sharing our faith, to be loving, to be moved by compassion. This is an issue of compassion, really is. I mean, when you see the despair and the anxiety, but the sense of hopelessness. I mean, there's nothing worse than going through life hopeless, without purpose, without meaning. This generation, another characteristic we didn't talk about that Dr. Twenge identified, is that they're slow to grow up. They're staying adolescents longer. And I think part of that is because there's no purpose. There's no meaning in life. It says they're growing up slower than before, not faster. They're not in a hurry to take responsibility. And again, I think it all comes with purpose. Once you have purpose and your life has meaning, then you quickly get on that path, and you want to be about the business that you're called to. But if you're just here by chance, and of course that's what's being taught in our schools through evolution, you're just here by chance, nothing spectacular about you, you're just here. No, we're here by design. And once you understand that, when you've come back into a relationship with your Creator through Jesus Christ, then with that comes that sense of purpose, that sense of meaning, which propels you forward in life. So parents, please, especially young parents, if you have young children, and even, you know, teenagers, have these conversations, interject the element of faith and share, if you have a relationship with Jesus Christ, share that with your kids by all means. Don't be influenced and don't hesitate because of all of this nonsense you hear that you shouldn't impose your religion on your children. That's hogwash. In fact, God tells us that we're to train up our children in the way that they should go. And when they're old, they will not depart from it. But if we haven't trained them up, they have nothing to come back to. That's our responsibility as parents. It's not the pastor's responsibility. It's not the Sunday school teacher's responsibility. It's our responsibility as parents. And folks, I hope you get a sense of how tragic this situation is. These young people, by the way, eventually they will grow up. And they'll be running things. And without a sense of purpose, without a sense of meaning, and fearful of everything, and anxious, right? It almost makes me anxious to think that they're going to be running the country. But there's time. There's time to turn this nation around, turn the culture around. But it's going to take work, and we're going to have to be intentional about it. And it starts with each and every one of us being bold, being courageous, being obedient to sharing our faith right where we are, each and every day, with every opportunity we have. Stop hiding the fact that you are a follower of Jesus Christ. Be bold and share that with others. And who knows, maybe just by sharing it, you will see those that are gripped by fear, anxiety, and depression will also find the meaning and the purpose of life. Well, folks, just about out of time. Tomorrow, Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson joins us, chairman of the Republican Study Committee. We're going to look at social media again, but this time we're going to go back to that topic of censorship. New information about how big media is censoring conservatives. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul when he says, you've done everything you could do, prayed, prepared, taken your stand. By all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.